Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show. Cast.
Love podcasts, hate nonsense. It's the Politics Joe podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Very demure. Mm. Very cultured.
Your little girl. That's the...
Me?
Yeah, well, that's the law, isn't it?
The law is not that.
Being demure makes you girly, I think, was what we decided, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the law, not the law.
Yeah, got you.
But...
In Keir Starmer's Britain... I can be a little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Good.
Yeah.
Ava Santina.
Hi.
Hi. How's your day?
Great. I love this day.
Me too. I love today. Different reasons, but I love today.
You've had a good day.
I have had a good day, yeah.
Can you tell them what you've been doing today?
I've been interviewing Frank Lampard today for Unfiltered. So I was excited for today for that. You were excited for today because...
It's the budget.
Yeah. And PMQs. It's like Christmas and your birthday.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this is how I think my dad feels when it's like Saturday football, you know?
Yeah. Do we do budget first or do we do PMQs first?
Can we do budget first because it's all in my head? Is that all right?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
What are the headlines?
Well, I think that we go through it maybe... bit by bit.
Sure.
Because otherwise it'll just be me listing things at you. And I don't
like
think
that. I'd like that though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to do that?
No, no. No, but what are the top, standout things? Everyone heard about this 2p national insurance cut that was sort of briefed absolutely everywhere.
That was briefed. Also the windfall tax on oil and gas companies, their profits, that was also briefed everywhere. And he's done that.
Yeah.
Non-dom tax break. Ooh. So he's doing what Labour wanted to do. We'll come back to and explain that a bit more.
Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll come to that.
Household support fund, that'll be extended, but we'll explain that. Alcohol duty frozen. There's going to be a tax on vapes and a one-off tax on cigarettes. I don't know if I'm being really stupid. I can't see the amount that he wants to tax vapes.
Right.
I don't know if I've just totally missed that, but maybe, I did go looking.
Maybe he's just... Well... They're going to ban disposable vapes, so that presumably would have to be, it'd have to be a tax on the liquid, right? It'd have to be a tax on e-liquid.
So. Yeah. But we'll go into that in a bit more in a minute. Temporary tax cuts for the arts sector will be made permanent.
They always say, how many times can you say we're temporarily freezing alcohol duty, fuel duty? That it's been frozen for years, bro.
Yeah, but you don't want to renege, right?
Yeah.
So you don't ever want to say we're abolishing or we're increasing the tax.
You also get to keep announcing it.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, we're going to freeze this for 4 years.
Yeah.
Every 6 months. So, it's temporary, but we're just going to roll it over.
Yeah. Well, let's actually start with the alcohol duty freeze then, because that's, I think this is, so they were due to go up in August. They'll now be frozen until February. That is going to benefit nearly 40,000 pubs up and down the country. But the hospitality sector are really upset about this because that's a brilliant headline, right? Yeah, your booze is going to be cheaper. But if you're running a pub at the moment, you're being hemorrhaged by increased rents and energy payments. Like, the energy payments are leading to pubs closing down up and down the country.
They'd probably rather have further cost of living support, right?
Yes. They would like a relief fund, particularly because some ministers like to sort of get onto the narrative that pubs are like a community hub.
Yep.
And that they're a community centre and places where people can go during the day because there might not be a lot in your town. So why doesn't it fall under, this is ridiculous because obviously you can't have a, you know, a taverna being like the, like a council run institution or whatever.
They should be.
But if you know that older people are going there and it would cost you money to set up a centre if there wasn't a pub, then there is an argument that you should be part funding it.
God, I love a fucking taverna, you know.
Mm.
A little bit of moussaka, maybe some Clefetico.
Yeah?
Yeah, gotcha.
What about those vine leaves? I can imagine you being a vine leaf man.
Yeah, what are we saying? Dolmades? Is that vine leaves in Greek? No, meatballs. What are they called? No, I think it is called that. Anyway, yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Just like a long afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Cold beers, small plates.
Small plates.
Welcome to London. Yeah. Welcome to Amy LeMay's London.
Yeah, it is.
What's the London Night Tsar got to say about this? Well, she's been having a bad week, isn't she?
Since you brought her up. I'm furious about this Night Tsar.
Are you?
I'm furious that she got a 40% pay increase last January without meeting any of her KPIs.
She must be doing a great job.
Right. When has anyone ever seen the London Night Tsar on the media round? When has she ever been out there talking to the media?
Well, maybe the reason she doesn't do that is she's doing it now and everyone's like, shut the fuck up.
Because she's only come out now because her reputation is being rightfully trashed online. Her one job, and this is specifically said by the Mayor of London in City Hall during questions on why have you appointed a Night Tsar in 2016. Her one job was, among many, but, you know, for emphasis.
Yeah.
Is to be a relation between local councillors and local businessmen and local residents and basically make sure that institutions like clubs and pubs aren't being shut down or losing their licensing because some busybody next door is complaining about the noise. She's overseen how many closures in London?
Yeah, all these venues talking about, right, that are saying, yeah, very good on the alcohol field. You see, how about stopping the venues from closing down?
Yeah.
There's tons of them.
Just... you know, a little point here for the new Everisto Club, which is Trisha's on Dean Street. Soho institution, right? It's been there forever, since before she was born. And then one millionaire two streets away decided it was a little bit loud and Westminster Council entertained this and threatened to take away their licensing. Now, big campaign happened and it meant that the club didn't shut. Where the hell was she during all of this?
I feel like the Night Tsar, it would be a better appointment if they weren't a Radio 6 DJ. And don't get me wrong, I like her show. I'm a bit of a Radio 6 guy, as it would happen.
Surprises me.
Because you are a wanker. That's the wrong appointment. They need like some fucking licensing nerd. They need like a council, an absolute weapon. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A proper, you almost want to take, it's kind of like, I don't know, like Anakin, like in Star Wars, right? You want the guy who was once on their side, but now you fucking weaponize them and then you're turning this guy who's rejected pub after pub, club after club. He shut their licenses down. You've turned him to the dark side. You've given him half a gram and he's gonna get these clubs back open. He's saying, fuck you, Westminster Council. Yeah. I'm sorting it out.
Yeah.
Amy LeMay, I feel, is like the wrong appointment. I don't know.
Even on a more practical basis, what she should be doing when she comes in every single morning is she should have every single licensing disagreement that is going on in the capital on her desk. And she should be asking her advisors, what's happening with this? Should I go and speak to the local council? Let me go and talk to the landlord. Let me go there at 10 o'clock at night and actually see if it is unreasonable levels of noise.
That's probably a good go-between, right? Between the Labour mayor and the Labour-run councils. You kind of see that would be the thing to do.
She even had the audacity to reply to an independent article and say that it was a total lie that she only works 2.5 days a week. Now, Amy LeMay, I looked up your job spec, okay? I looked it up. And you only do work 2.5 days a week.
This poor woman, if you listen to this.
If you work extra days, fine. Good for you. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But that isn't your job spec. So don't call the independent a liar.
Yeah. Well, she's come out fighting and it's backfired. But increasingly, I think of sort of our entire national culture, right, is previously you would have said that like London was quite homogenous was kind of the place where the big acts would go, where the heart of culture is. And increasingly, it feels like London is basically just this space where it's like it just serves an economic purpose. Do you know what I mean? It's like a WeWork. Like, people just come here to work and then leave. Mm. It's like, oh yeah, well, you can have pubs until 10 because, you know, you'll want a pint after work. But if no, don't go out until 3 because you won't, there'll be some productivity losses the next day. You know what I'm saying?
We want you in for your Pret coffee.
Yeah, have the Pret coffee. Have two. Maybe even get a subscription. But no more than 4 pints.
Mm-hmm. You know what else you should have done?
What?
Why did we have that one glorious summer when Soho was pedestrianised?
Oh.
You don't need to drive down Old Compton Street.
Yeah.
You don't.
No.
And we had tables all over the street.
Yeah,
the restaurants
alfresco,
had like...
Alfresco, darling.
We did. We were alfresco.
We were.
And we had no diesel.
We had a piazza.
We had a piazza.
Where did it all go wrong?
It was like Venice.
It only took a pandemic, yeah. We got waylaid. We did the first point. That was pretty good. But the big one. Let's do the big one. Let's do national insurance.
Mm.
2p. How much is that going to cost? Quite a lot, presumably.
So it's going to cost £10.4 billion.
Yep.
And almost half of that ends up in the pockets of the richest fifth of households.
Nice.
Only 3%
nice.
Of the poorest benefit.
Good news.
That.
Good news. My guy.
So just on like a bit back of a fag packet that's now more expensive, I might add, under this budget. Oh,
she's
did
on
that?
Fire. Have you been workshopping this stuff?
I've been really lonely upstairs. So a 2p national insurance cut means the average teacher will save £349.
Okay.
An MP will save £764.
Yeah, smart.
So who's benefiting here, you know?
Yeah.
So this doubled on. So there was a lot of conversation as well about how the polls didn't really move after he introduced the first 2% tax cut that came into effect this January. Comfortable there?
Yeah, just get my pen out of my
nice
pocket.
One.
Yeah.
Nice one.
I want to make some notes on all this hot intel you're giving me.
Hot soup of budget.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop that.
Hot budget soup.
So the polls didn't really move when it was a 2p cut because, well, also, it hasn't really had a lot of time to move. It's kind of only had 6 weeks to bed in.
Mm.
But then now we're talking about a 4%, at 4p tax cut. That means it's gone from 12% to 8% in a matter of 4 months. That's actually quite a seismic shift in tax cut, right? So, I mean...
This, for me, is really interesting, right? Because... I think this is a good metaphor. I think it's symbolic of the purpose of this budget, right? The right way to think about this budget is as a political event rather than an economic one. There is not going to be time for this to bed in. I saw somewhere, I can't remember, I think I might have been reading it on the New Statesman, it might have been somewhere else, that there was like a Tory MP had said to a shadow front bencher that they were actually quite scared about winning the election because it would mean they'd have to implement the things that they're talking about doing. Like, it's a fiscal fiction, right? They know they're not going to be in power, so they're doing things like hacking away at departmental budgets that have absolutely nothing left to give in the coming years. No one thinks they can make the cuts, right? It's not like 2010 where the government departments have been fattened up by 13 years of Labour government, right? Mm. There isn't tons of material to give. So you think about this as a political event, right? It's to try and address the problems in the polls. It's to try and recover some of that ginormous deficit to the Labour Party. Failing that, it's to placate the Tory backbenches. When you look at the last 2p national insurance cut, did nothing to the polls. Didn't touch it. You know, they're all conservatives, media, politicians, all clamouring for tax cuts. The 2p cut did absolutely nothing. They're still basically at the Liz Truss depths, right? They're still way off the pace. And so you then think, okay, well, it's done nothing to the polls. So what's the purpose of this next 2p cut? It can only be to sort of placate the Tory backbenchers who are going, we have the highest tax burden in X number of years. Like, we've got to do something about it. That's the only purpose that this can serve.
Mm. There was even that little briefing that was in Tim Shipman of the Sunday Times on the weekend where on his 2p tax cut, Jeremy Hunt was really upset that the ministers on the broadcast round weren't being told to push out, that he'd saved the public all of this money. And Sunak had apparently been like, God, he's so boring. This guy is so uninspiring.
I mean, that's rich coming from the guy telling Grazia that he likes laying the table.
I thought what was really funny about that was when he sort of sat back, imagining himself making the bed. So he was like, well, you can make the bed. That's really satisfying. And then he just sort of sits back and kind of looks up, like quite wistfully. What is that?
I hate making the bed.
Do you?
Don't tell Jordan Peterson. I hate making the bed.
No, 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 because Jordan Peterson would be all right with that because he's talking to young single men, right? Get up and make the bed.
Yeah.
You did the ultimate man thing.
Yes.
You went
out,
you got a woman to do it for you.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Invisible labour, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort that out, will you?
So it's like, who's making Ollie Dugmore's bed? Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully Jordan Peterson. Where are we going with that? Yeah, what do you think? What do you think was? Do you think the reason that he and his wife looked so out of their depth was because they have staff that do those things for them, so they can't actually talk about laying the table and making the bed? Or do you think it's because they actually just have no discernible personality whatsoever, and they come across as freaks because they are part of the international leisure class and therefore are freaks?
I think, not to speculate too wildly on their personal relationship, but they look like they just had an argument. Do you know what I mean? Like, they look like they just had a bit of tension and then had to sit down and do this grazia thing where they're being asked to, like, show that they love each other. Because she's looking at him with, like, this... He says at one point in the interview, he goes, you know, sometimes mid-afternoon I go back upstairs to the flat when I'm in Downing Street just to check that she's made the bed or remake them. And she looked at him as if to say, listen, pal, you are so finished when we finish this interview. Like, you don't know the world of pain that I'm going to unleash on you.
You know? I hadn't thought about that. Like what it would be like if both you and your partner were in the public eye. So you would have to imagine having to do a media opportunity, having just had the stinkiest fucking row you've ever, and then being like, I've got to pretend to like you now.
Well, I can actually give you an amazing example of that.
Please.
There's a singer called Halsey.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of her partner. Laura, do you know the name of her partner? No. Anyway, so there's this, like, they go on Good Morning America, and they have to sing this song about, like, how it's just you and I, and, like, you know, till I die, we're going to be together or whatever. Just before this performance, she finds out he's been cheating on her for years. I mean, that is just...
Did she sing the song?
Yeah, she did. And, like, all the way through it as well. We should even put a clip in it so, like, people can see it. It is so funny. He's, like, trying to, like, perform with her, right? To try and, like, hug her, like, performatively or whatever. And she's looking at him like... You are going to get it, pal. Like,
no way.
Don't touch me.
That's rough.
Mm.
Fuck, imagine having to do that.
Yeah.
Right, back to the budget. I think we're doing quite well. To our haters and detractors, I would say one tangent per segment of the budget is quite good, I think.
But if you don't like tangents, you don't have to listen to it. I think that's what's important.
How about
you
just fuck yourself? Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
There are plenty of other politics podcasts that you can go and listen to.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And not all of them are done by sixth formers like us. So...
No, they're fucking done by dry lunches, yeah.
Every time they say, like, well, just like a bunch of sixth formers in the common room, I'm like, yes, I look very young. I look fantastic.
Where are we up to? We've done the impact of the national insurance cut for workers? Have we ticked that off?
Well, sorry, also, I don't have a smoker's cough. This is me having a cold last week and then just having the remnants of it.
I think, oh, is that where I got my fucking cold from?
I think I got it from Sean.
And he's then, like, laid low. He's been...
No, he was really sick all last
week. Yeah, I'm saying he's been struck down by it.
Yeah, he has been, yeah.
It's fucked him up.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that, both of you.
Anytime. So... What was... Okay, so then on to public spending, right?
Okay.
So, public spending, it was projected or it was written, widely reported that he was going to cut public spending by 0.2% projection-wise. And he announced that there'd be no cuts. And what I didn't understand, this was actually really bad comms on his part. He said that he was going to, he was introducing a package to improve NHS productivity with a £3.4 billion investment, yeah? He didn't put that into his public spending increase. So he just said it, public spending is going to stay the same. So either that's just bad comms, or that means money is being reallocated from another department to afford this new productivity streamlining allocation.
Yeah, I find this point about whether or not there are going to be cuts or not. It's like, again, it's kind of a fiscal fiction, right? Like, if you look at the projections, if they were elected and they did in the next, and they did actually implement what they're saying they're going to implement, I made a note of this. The per capita day-to-day budgets will be cut by 17% in real terms.
Quite a lot, though.
Yeah, it is quite a lot.
Mm.
It is quite a lot. Okay, well, I don't want to steal your talking point from you, but this would be a kind of classic moment for Rachel Reeves to go, ah, but the Reagan question, right? Because for all of these announcements, right, yeah, about public spending or national insurance or fuel duty or alcohol duty, there is a simple, inescapable fact, which is that average real wages are still below what they were in 2008. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what he says here, Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves' riposte is simple.
Are people feeling better off?
Exactly. Answer, fuck no.
Yeah. And fuck then we no. go and snog Gorbachev or something.
Oh, my God. Would you rather kiss Reagan or Gorbachev?
What about mystery third question? Third.
Sure. Who? Thatcher.
Harold Wilson.
Right. Yeah. Reagan.
No, because I don't think when you're choosing like when you're choosing someone you want to snog from history,
yeah,
you don't choose someone like you align with, right? You're like, oh, this has got to be a hateful.
Are you suggesting I align with Reagan?
No, that's why you'd want to kiss him, because right. you don't align.
You're suggesting I'd hate fuck Reagan.
Yeah.
Right.
But I didn't want to say those words, so I'm glad you did.
Sure.
So I was thinking, like, I wouldn't want to kiss Harold Wilson.
Yeah. Big Wilsonite.
Yeah, I'd want to, like, you know, I don't know. I've got to be careful here.
I think Gorby's a bit of a weapon. I think he's a kisser.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, no, I think he's biting the lip.
Biting the lip?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Don't ever talk to me again. So, on that point about the NHS, about the £3.4 billion investment, and so this was part of him streamlining, right? And this is part of him making public services more productive.
Mm.
This has really upset the NEU. What the National Education Union are talking about, and this specifically Daniel Kabadi here, who I'm going to be quoting, he's saying teachers work the most unpaid hours of any profession and have seen a 25% pay cut in real terms since 2010. With his productivity plan for public services, the Chancellor also wants schools to do more with less. Now, that's the really important bit. He's saying, I'm not going to be cutting public services, public spending, but this is at a time when teachers and schools are potentially going on strike because they're telling you, we don't have enough money to run the school. We need teaching assistants. We've been cut threadbare. We need cash. And he's just gone, don't worry. We're going to keep it as it is.
Hmm.
You're just going to streamline it a bit better.
It's kind of classic conservative politics, that, isn't it? It's the moment that we're in now is just, oh, well, we'll just be more productive. Oh, well, we'll cut the budget a little bit. You'll deliver the same thing.
Mm. You know what wasn't very productive? Jeremy. Going on a huge run this morning when you're about to be doing your spring statement.
Do we not stand? Do we not stand a man who exercises?
But how do you have time for that? Like, how do you have time? If you're about to deliver, like, one of the most important pieces of, you know, public spending or whatever, your spending statement, how do you have time to go, I'm just going to get the dog and I'm going to go out running? Who was at home making breakfast?
Invisible labour, Ava Santina.
Mm.
Probably his staff, I would imagine. I'd be surprised if it was his wife.
No. They live a very threadbare life in number 11.
Do they?
They actually do. That's the whole point.
He's like a multi-millionaire.
Yeah, but 10 and 11, the flats are so tiny. You don't like have a lot of help there.
No, I'm talking about his fucking gaff in Pimlico.
Oh, fine, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he was in number 11 today because I saw him running with the Labrador and it looked photo like op. They were going back into...
The Johnson School. The Johnson School of Photo Op. Look, I'd like to think that he had most of the budget.
Sorry.
I'd like to think that he had most of the budget, you know, polished off well in advance of this morning, to be quite honest with you. I support him living a healthy lifestyle. I encourage him to do that. I don't want our politicians to just be wake up, budget planning, deliver the budget implementation, maybe like a packet of cheese and onion crisps at 11:30, off to bed. Wake up, 7 a.m, 7:05, budget implementation for the next 3 years.
Well, let me flip that and say something incredibly sanctimonious. What about all of those teachers who this morning had to get up at 6 o'clock, probably drive an hour to school, possibly got themselves a little bit of breakfast, maybe at 11 o'clock when the kids were on break, have worked all day, they do their marking in their free time.
Yep.
They don't have time to go on runs.
Yeah. I've got quite a lot of time in the summer to go for a run though, haven't they?
It's Olly Jugmore, man of the people. So let's talk a little bit about what this budget... What?
I like that you were moving away from that for me. Yeah, I can't wait for them to come for me for that.
Yeah.
A full stop. No irony. No irony.
Olly Jugmore hates public sector workers.
Thank you for saying what I couldn't.
So young people.
Mm.
So I know that, just try not to listen to this and then get all up, not you, but like if you're listening to this, and try not to get your back up and say, oh God, you know, there are renters in other age categories. Specifically talking about young people for one moment.
Please.
If you are under 30 and you are living in a big city in the UK, even actually commuter towns, which we've now heard rent has spiked in also, places like Bolton, very expensive to get property there now, you will be facing an increase in your rent from your landlord. There are many people I know in London who are living in 6-bed shared accommodations. That means with five other people, six people in one house, and they're paying nearly £1,000 a month rent. And they're not living in central London. They're living far out. Mm. Okay. They're living in like zones 4 and 5. It's far away. They've got to swallow that cost. They've also got to swallow the cost of council tax hikes because the government isn't allocating any more money to local government. They've also got to swallow the cost of living, right? So all of their food is more expensive than the supermarket. I know that everyone is experiencing that. But for young people who have just graduated university and would like to move to a city, their life is pretty miserable at the moment. They might be able to go out once every 2 weeks, but having a takeaway at the moment is a serious treat. This is not how people should be living. Mm. And there's nothing in that budget that is helpful to them.
What did he announce on housing?
Oh, second homes. So yeah, if you're living in places like Cornwall and Devon, he's going to make it harder for you to have a second home. But that doesn't... What's that got to do with my point about cities?
Well, no, because I was teeing you up to say, well, he's done very little about housing, to be
quite
honest.
Why were you trying to catch me out?
I'm not trying to catch you out.
Catch this.
I'll catch this fucking cold. That's what I've caught off you over, Santina.
Yeah.
No, I was underarming you a little home run.
Well, I can't do that home run because I can't remember where I've put it on here.
No, I think, you know, you're sat there talking about...
Wanging on about, you know...
Young person's issues. Where's the announcement on rent? You know, where's the life raft for private renters? Where's the house building announcement? I think it's one of the chronic things that gets overlooked to such an extent in all of these events. Do you remember how excited we were about the supply side reform that would essentially only overheat the housing market? When we're like, maybe there'll be 99% mortgages because it would just be a little crumb of housing-based policy.
Please, sir, can I have some shelter?
Yes. How about 1 million homes a year, Chancellor?
No, because you stupid fuck. That would... If we built that many houses,
yes,
it would decrease the value of people who already have their houses. And they've worked really hard doing nothing for the past 20 years to see their houses appreciate in value. All right, so he's going to abolish multi-dwelling stamp duty rule. He made a really good joke about Angela Rayner there, actually. But it was objectively quite funny, the way that she was coming back at him. It was quite Brecht.
I don't understand why they have a problem with Angela Rayner having lived in a council house. Can you why is that funny to them?
Because,
I don't get it.
Right, so to put me in their shoes for 1 minute, it's kind of like the Apsana-Begum argument, right? Which is like... You use the council house argument to say, I came from a council house and so I can identify with voters. The Tories don't have that ability to identify with people who live in council houses and they can't really lambast you anymore. They can't go, ha, Povo, lived in a council house, did you? But they can do, like, fuck you, other people need them.
Right. I don't understand.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I see where you're coming, but it doesn't make sense because like council housing should be available for everyone. Is my position. Like the ideal conception of it is like the local community, which includes people like doctors and lawyers, as well as people like electricians and plumbers. Like everyone lives together. That's how you foster like a sense of community, a multicultural people from all sorts of different backgrounds, a cohesive society, right? Rather than having like multi-millionaires and ghettos like side by side. Like that doesn't work.
It's dangerous, that man, though. The povos start getting ideas. Start getting ideas above their station.
I don't know if that's... Do you think it's a good look for Jeremy Hunt, the public schoolboy, to be like admonishing the working class Angela Rayner about council housing?
He did Starmer on that today, you know.
Did he?
He went, I'm a Surrey boy. And then he went, so are you, aren't you? Surrey boy. We're both little Surrey boys.
They are both Surrey
boys. I just
boys.
Thought it was quite clever.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
So he's going, fuck you, Povo. Fuck you, Posho.
Get you a man who can do both. Get you a chancellor who can do both.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also going to abolish the holiday lets. So that's the big thing that's meant to help renters. Actually, this was a really big issue in Weymouth when we went down to do the Bibby Stockholm.
It's a big issue in tons of coastal communities.
Yeah. So loads of people are... It's beautiful in Portland, which is where the Bibby Stockholm is.
Great place for a second home.
Yeah. Great place for the Bibby Stockholm.
Yeah.
There's a really awful part of that. It's so beautiful that when Sean and I went to go and film The Barge, which is obviously like a pit hell of ugliness... Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to film it like in situ because it looked like we were at Butlins. And I was like, this looks very nice. How do I tell people that they've got Legionnaires in there? Like, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and young people have to move out of the town.
Yeah.
He's also going to reduce capital gains tax on property.
Right.
Because he says that'll encourage movement. So people are just basically keeping their assets and they're not, the market's not stimulating.
Right.
They're not moving about.
Trying to get some movement in the in the property market. Okay. We said we'd come back to vapes.
Yeah.
I don't understand introducing a tax on something which the NHS is advocating people do to stop smoking. Why is a public... Like, I understand when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to tobacco, to... deeply dangerous things. Two things that are, ask a doctor. They're not good for you, right? They're not a good thing to do. So what do? We say, well, if you want to drink as an adult, you're allowed to. However, you will cost our public healthcare sector money. We're going to levy taxes against these products to help fund for the care that you will need because you use these things. Mm. They also work on an effective level to dissuade people from smashing 8 pints every night or... smoking a 20-deck a day, right? Like, it's deliberate public policy. And I think actually in terms of smoking, one of the most successful public policy interventions that the government has made, that whilst you still allow people to do it, you make it expensive enough that people can't be just relentlessly chain smoking like a French author or whatever.
But who did that hurt the most? And that hurt Gen Z, right? That was a big attack on hedonism.
Right.
Because they've been priced out of like being able to be 19, 20, go and have 4 pints, smoke a packet of cigarettes, maybe meet the love of your life, or maybe have sex in a gutter. Not anecdotal.
You definitely will meet the love of your life because the 20 deck and the 4 pints are the love of your life. So, but you're right. Like, if that costs £50 now in London to do what you've just described, let's... I have recently been paying more than £7 for a beer in some places. You go to the right places, you can pay less than a fiver.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, let's just take £7 as the figure. £28. Certain news agents, you'll pay £18 for a 20 deck. Well, you're at £46.
Yeah. You can't be buying drinks for someone either. Like, you have to be sure that you fancy someone.
Mm.
Because a guy's not going to come up to you now.
It's such an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment. If I hypothetically wanted a gin and tonic, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Dear listener.
You could get like 16, 17 quid charged for that.
Mm.
And do you know what else as well? Whenever we talk about like the prices of pints in central London, there's always some nonce who replies like being like, you just don't know where to go. And it's like, you're watching our YouTube video at 8 p.m. on a Thursday. You're not even out, pal. Like...
No, look, there are good spots, right, where you can pay under a fiver, but it's not everywhere by any means. But I don't understand the tax on vapes. Like, what is the purpose of it? Is it just to accrue revenue? I don't think we should be dissuading people from vaping, particularly not within the context, and we've kind of had the conversation already about disposable vapes, but let's just say they're banned, right? Let's say disposable vapes are off the table. You're talking about taxing people from using e-liquid and refillable vapes. So they're not throwing away like a battery a day in their Lost Mary. They're topping up their little boy with little pipette. Why do you want to dissuade people from doing that?
Well, they want to price children out of being able to buy them, right?
How about just enforcing the fucking trading standards that say you should be 18 to buy this thing?
Stop being so fucking sensible, all right, pal? All right? Rein that in.
Sorry.
Some people, I do know someone who makes vape juice for himself.
They make it for themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
From scratch?
In a big pot.
What, as in they like cook it up?
You kind of like
Walter
think,
White.
I don't, you kind of buy like a, you don't, you buy like a selection of certain ingredients off Amazon that make up the vape juice, and you can buy them a lot cheaper in bulk separately.
Yeah.
And then you basically boil them together.
They crushed. It was a hangover from the EU. We were Brexiting, but the legislation was already being introduced. You used to be able to buy e-liquid in like 100 mil quantities or bigger, so it was cheaper. The EU introduced like maximum 10 mil size, so tons of smaller producers got wiped out basically because the packaging costs became so excessive for them. They couldn't make
But
the
why would
work.
They do that? Can you actually explain the rationale of that? Because I get it with like limiting the amount of paracetamol that you can buy in a packet, but presumably people weren't buying 100 millilitres of vape juice to drink it. You know what I mean?
Depends what you're into, man.
Yeah.
People sniff bath salts and shit.
What's wrong with that?
Just a good Thursday night. Not having 4 pints and buying a 20 deck, am I? Where do we go from here? Election speculation? Well, question mark?
There was one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay, go on.
I wanted to talk a little bit about short-termism.
Right.
Particularly, so he announced an extension to the Household Support Fund, and that is if you are you need help with basic necessities, basically like access to food banks and things like that. And he extended this, but for 6 months. And then the Trussell Trust are obviously quite upset about it because they're like, "But you said you were going to do it for 2 years, and you've only done it for 6 months." Probably goes back to what you were saying earlier, which is that if you only temporarily extend it for a couple of months at a time, you can keep announcing it as if it's a new policy, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, it's just sad because charities can't forward plan. So if you've got this scheme in place, they can go, right, we need to allocate X amount of food parcels every single week, and we need to make sure that we're doing this, this and this. If you don't give them the security of a couple of years, then they can't keep planning.
Totally. No, I agree with you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's the Politics Show cast.
There was a line in this thing saying that there won't now be a spending review before the next election. It's not on the thing. I saw it myself when I was doing my research.
Say that again.
There is a line in one of the documents published by the government saying that there will not now be a spending review before the next election.
Right.
Which I think partly serves the government because there's not going to be a fiscal event where they're like, you can't do any of this, it's not happening, sorry. But it also is probably a kind of indication that there probably isn't going to be an election in January because the spending review is in the autumn.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably looking at November. Do you think that this means there is an election in May? Like, if you were looking at this just solely from a when will the election be perspective, what's your reading?
Well, I've never thought that there would be an election in May, just to be clear.
Oh.
I've actually never thought that. But, and when I never think things, they normally happen. So take from that what you will. I just thought it was... Every time that he was talking about like the alcohol duty freeze, or he was talking about fuel duty freeze, he was talking about what effect that would have on inflation, right? So he was saying that like fuel duty coming down, keeping that 5p cut, headline inflation will shrink by 0.2% in 2024-25. He knows he has to get inflation at 2% to meet the Bank of England guidelines before he calls an election. Otherwise, he hasn't met any of his pledges.
Yep.
And he knows that he won't have any body like the OBR or Bank of England again. He won't have any of them on his side, right? Mm. So that to me was like election is in the forefront of his mind. But then he said this little throwaway line, in the next spending review, the Treasury will do things differently. In the next spending review.
Mm.
So he's either so delulu that he thinks that they're getting in again. Or he is planning for an autumn spending review before an election.
Yeah, I think that I saw a line that said it's not, they won't do one before the next election. I think I'll have to pull it up, see if I can find it. I think I saw Pippa Creera tweeted it. Let me see.
Well, she's probably more reliable than my notes, so.
Absolutely not. One second.
Did she check that in after? Oh, do you know why? Because they've all been to, which I didn't listen into. They did the lobby after the, they did lobby meeting after the budget was announced. So does that come from a Downing Street spokesperson?
No, it's a photo of a piece of paper that says 2.23 from the budget red book. It states there will not be another spending review before the next election. Here we go. Section 2.23. These plans will be developed over the coming months ahead of the next spending review. That spending review, which will come after the general election, will put in place a robust and comprehensive strategy for improving public sector productivity, putting these improvements at the heart of departmental settlements.
So he thinks that they're going to get in again and he'll be doing another spending review.
I guess you have to fucking believe it, don't you? You have to think that. You can't be like, we won't get in. Otherwise, yeah. You just...
Manifest it, babe.
Yeah. Conceive, believe, achieve.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to touch in the budget? It's very heavy on the analysis, Ava Santina. There's been absolutely no mention of dick rudders or anything like that.
No. But would you like a... Do you need a penis joke?
Is that No. That's not what I was saying. Okay. I'm just saying that right. This has been a very serious...
We could ring Ed. No.
Do you think the reason this has been so serious is because he's not here?
We should get him. We should ring him up now, and we should say, "Can you help?"
Fuck it, why not? Let's give this a go.
You know what? While you're doing that, let's also just note that he said burglaries have halved in the last 14 years after we invested in 20,000 more police officers.
When
How
did
outrageous
Ed say that?
Is that, Jeremy Hunt?
Oh, right. Sorry,
we're doing the budget here, Ollie.
Sorry, we've. They've halved burglaries.
They've halved burglaries in the last 14 years. But you know what? Okay,
I could swear like burglary is more widespread now than ever.
Yeah, but if you use your galaxy brain, yeah?
I have been to rob a lot of people.
Yeah. If police physically can't attend every burglary that's called, it doesn't get logged, halves them. Halves the number recorded, right?
Smart. Come on then.
You got to start thinking with your rudder.
I don't think he'll answer the phone because he's currently terrorising landlords.
It's pathetic.
He'll be working, unlike us.
Yeah, he'll be working to lose another SD card. Am I right, ladies?
No.
Welcome to the OT. What about Harry?
Fine.
We're in now.
Yeah, we're in now. We might as well commit to the bit. I don't think he'll answer.
Oh. Good.
Let's fuck
get him
up.
On the phone.
Let's fuck him up. Fuck it.
If you couldn't hear that, Finn said we should ask Harry about his frosted tips.
He won't answer either.
He's gone full... Justin Timberlake in the Crimea River video.
Let's see if they come back. Is that us for the budget? Do you have anything else serious you'd like to say?
No, I think...
Thank God. Fucking got you. No, it's been great.
I think one thing I'd just say about Keir Starmer's response.
Oh, yeah, good. That's a good idea. We have just done half an hour of talking about Jezza.
Yeah, it's been so unbalanced. We've been, you know, we've given so much time to the Conservatives. We should really balance it out.
Should really stop shilling for the Tory party.
Yeah, I should. Do you know the jokes about me shilling for Reform are actually so dead now? It's like you can.
You would say that.
But you can report on something without shilling for them. Like, can you calm down?
No.
Like, I talk about Labour and the Tories all the time, you know?
And how they're inadequate when compared to Reform.
Doesn't matter what I say. It's my analysis. Keir Starmer said that the budget showed the Tories were bereft of ideas. And I prefer the idea that just the budget itself was bereft.
Oh, grieving.
As if it's like sentient, you know?
Yeah, it's just.
It's like the UK economy, bereft.
Gutted.
Because there's been such a stagnation in growth.
If I was him, I'd be pretty pissed off. Because the windfall tax and the non-dom thing, those are their ideas. Like, Jeremy Hunt has just stolen those. He's stolen the non-dom thing. It's not quite exactly the same thing, but nonetheless. He's basically said, all these things you're putting forward to raise money for your ideas, whether it's to put more money into the NHS, whether it's to do X or Y, he's basically taking it away from them so that come a general election, he gets to do the whole either tax or borrowing bombshell. You know, Labour can't say where the money for these things is going to come from. Yada, yada, yada.
But broke, whining that they've stolen your policies.
Yeah.
Woke.
Yeah.
Explaining that that means there won't be any breakfast programmes like they'd like to have allocated. Or there won't be extra funding for the NHS. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. What's my programme for government? Their programme for government. Yeah. That's what it will be.
Yeah.
Love these ideas. He's implemented it for me already. 17% average per capita cut.
Like if I was writing Keir Starmer's retort.
Yeah.
I would have been like, on the non-dom thing, I'd have been like, and he's so blissfully unable to come up with his own ideas. He's taken our non-dom plan and he has allocated a 2p national insurance cut to the public. The only people that will benefit are fat cats like him.
I love the idea that Keir Starmer's speechwriter, when he's writing the speech, does an impression of Keir Starmer. What's it being written?
Got to get him in the game.
Yeah. So it'll be like this, Keir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I wanted breakfast programs for children. He wants more money in his back pocket.
Oh, good.
And then Angela Rayner's next to him, like, get him on the capital gains. Sorry.
Do you spend a lot of time fantasizing about what you would say?
Being
if you were
in the chamber. Yeah. Yeah, I do. Nice. No, I've just been alone all morning. I've had no one to talk to.
Sorry. Very sorry about that.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Will we do PMQs?
It's up to you.
Yeah, listen, we'll do a little bit of PMQs. Why not?
Okay.
We'll do a little bit of PMQs. Roll the clip.
Roll the clip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 3 years ago, Sarah Everard was walking home when she was abducted and murdered by a serving police officer who should have been trusted to keep her safe. Yeah. As a father, I can't imagine the pain her parents, her family and her friends are going through in this difficult anniversary week. Lady Angelina's report exposes the appalling failure in police vetting and in misconduct processes. And I'm very troubled by its conclusion that there is, and I'm going to quote it, nothing to stop another cousins operating in plain sight. Yeah. How can that be the case 3 years on from this horrendous crime?
Yeah. Keir Starmer starting off there with a point about this report into what happened with Sarah Everard.
Mm.
Would you like to walk us through it?
So Starmer's talking about the appalling failure of police vetting that was in Lady Angelina's report, and particularly the point that there is nothing, this is exactly what she said, that there's nothing to stop another Wayne Cousins happening again because no vetting has changed. What the issue is that the Home Office are writing guidance about how you should be vetting police officers. In their individual forces are not implementing those regulations and rules. And what Starmer was particularly upset about today is that there are a lot of police officers, apparently, who've been done for indecent exposure. which you'll remember is the crime that Wayne Cousins was done while he was still allowed to be a serving Metropolitan Police officer. The big issue was Cousins was moving about forces, right? So one force wasn't talking to the other one and saying, oh, this guy got his penis out before and exposed, you know, wanked off in front of a woman. And so he got the job at the next police force. And that's what Starmer's talking about, is why aren't these forces communicating with each other?
For me, you would like to think that the police would have enough joined up thinking to be able to communicate on those things. You'd also like to think that committing a crime just would immediately debar you from being a police officer.
Well, that's what he was getting at today. And there's a really, there's a harrowing moment in the Sarah Everard documentary that went out yesterday, which is that the detective is realising when she sent the police officers down to Kent to go and arrest him, she's realising when they're on their way that he is actually a serving Met police officer. She's working in Kent. She doesn't realise he's serving until they're about to knock on the door. I mean, that's wild, isn't it?
What channel is that on the doc? I haven't
BBC.
Seen that. Any good?
I would have thought you'd have been all over that. This guy's a big feminist normally.
Oh my fucking God. As if you've just done that. No, I'll watch it. I've actually been I've been rewatching June 1 in preparation to watch June 2 this weekend.
Sick.
Have you seen it?
No.
I thought you were a feminist.
Is June a feminist?
The entire thing is a feminist allegory, yeah.
Is it?
No. No, it's like Star Wars. In fact, I think Star Wars might be a ripoff of it.
Then I'll be all over that, won't I?
Yeah.
All over that.
Good doc, though?
Well, I mean, what makes a good doc?
Insight. Compelling narrative.
Yeah,
cinematography.
Pretty horrible content, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess when I ask you if it's a good documentary, I'm not asking you to endorse the crimes of Wayne Cousins.
Oh, then it was. So as he's going through the questions, so Starmer just goes on police and crime, right? And as he's going through the questions, he gets to this point where he starts talking about how women aren't able to have trust in police officers at the moment.
Yep.
And he's talking about the pretty pathetic conviction rate for rape that we have in this country.
Yep.
And Sunak is, honestly, like, I get it. Like, he's being, you know, he's being thrown all of the failures of the last 14 years at him. And so he's trying to sort of push back and do his usual kind of like quite jovial.
Well, we've done this and we've done Y.
Yeah. And it actually just looked quite sinister.
Right.
Because he was sort of saying things like, well, we've done this up by a third and we've done this and it's fantastic. And it's like, yeah, 3% of rapes lead to a conviction. So could you try and rein it in? And there was this really creepy bit where Starmer said, when will the Prime Minister make time for banning MPs from Parliament who face allegations of sex offences? He doesn't answer that question. He just comes back with, we have better street lighting up and down the country now. So ladies, when you're walking home tonight, you're going to be able to see the perpetrator.
Oh, I cannot believe you just said that.
But just because it's so sick and mental.
Yeah. Look, there's actually a similarity here between this and the budget, right? Which is like, you're like, the Conservative Party is waving in the electorate's face, being like, oh, look, 2p off your national insurance, la la la, as if the public don't understand fiscal drag and the fact that you've frozen income tax thresholds and you've dragged all of these people into higher, you know, tax brackets, right? And that they're paying more tax now than we ever have. But you're going, 2p off national insurance. At the same time, Starmer's there going, the conviction rate for rape is appalling. And you're like, yeah, look at the streetlights, bro.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fine. Like, no one's saying that we should have less street lighting. We're not, you know, we understand that that will have some kind of minor impact on the amount of crime that's happening at street level. We accept that. But that does not in any way mitigate the appalling rate at which we convict people for rape. Like, the two things, people aren't dumb. And just pointing at your minor achievement in relation to the fucking elephant in the room, do they think people are just fucking morons? Because they can't, surely. Maybe they do, but I think that's uncharitable.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just clinging on to the only things they can point to, having spent the last 14 years running the country into the ground.
Well, they've got a pretty serious problem with the court backlog at the moment. And if they are honest about why the conviction rate for rape is so terrible, they'd have to start talking about the entire court system and how...
Which is fucked.
Yeah, barristers are chronically underpaid and there's a 2 to 3 year wait on cases getting in front of a judge. So it's sort of like a domino effect, isn't it? If you go like, rape, conviction rape, bad, shit, someone's got to sort out the courts. And it's much easier to then put your weight behind perhaps getting a segment on a right-wing news channel that's like... Do you know that there are many many women who falsely report about rape? Have you thought about that?
Mm.
Yeah? Terrible.
Yeah.
That's a really good distraction from the...
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a story that's so common across basically the entirety of the public realm, right? Like, this is one example where people are being let down in the most... tragic of ways, and not just, you know, I'm not trying to prejudice any kind of thing that's going on in court right now, but let's just say, for example, that there is an open case involving a man, a woman, and witnesses, right, that takes 4 years. It's an incredibly traumatic thing. I'm making no judgment about who's guilty or whatever. For all of the people involved in that, if you've been raped and you have to wait 4 years for justice, that's appalling. If you haven't raped someone and you have to wait 4 years for you to be found not guilty, that's appalling. If you're a witness and you know that you're going to have to stand up in court and talk about this potentially horrible thing, but you don't know when for 4 years, that's also a shit thing for you to have to go through. Mm. It's just one example where across the public realm there is decay. It's collapsing. Meanwhile, in the private sector, whether it's energy, whether it's finance, it's... People are making hay whilst the sun shines, right? It's like the top 5% are just fucking flying. Wealth inequality is getting worse and worse and worse. And I think it's like the defining thing about Britain these days, right? About modern Britain, is that the public sector is in crisis and it's just going to be such a mess to unpick it that no one is even... The Conservatives aren't talking seriously about doing anything about it because they're basically at this point surrendering. They're basically admitting defeat.
I think it's a very stupid point that you just made, considering that Jeremy Hunt told the Commons today that wealth inequality was in decline.
Sorry. Forgive me. Forgive me.
Yeah.
Forgive me.
If you want to read, do a bit of fact-checking. Facts don't care about your feelings.
The facts don't care about my feelings. They very rarely do. Is that us? I feel like we've done quite a lot there, Ava Santina. I feel like we should probably draw a line under things. We've been going for quite a while.
Yeah, that's fine.
Final open invite for a dick joke.
Well, he didn't call back. Oh, okay. Tee me up again. Do it again. Final invitation.
Final invitation for a dick joke.
Ah, so good that you mentioned it. Mark Pritchard, the Tory MP today, he was going on about how we should only be building on brownfield sites. And the dick moment is an MP called Ben Everett, who is in Milton Keynes. And he is blocking the building of 60,000 houses because apparently Milton Keynes, which by the way wasn't even a real city until recently, needs preserving.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Milton Keynes. Not voluntarily.
Not,
for work purposes, no. Not to denigrate Milton Keynes, but it is a new town. You know, it is a creation of post-Second World War Britain. And the idea that it has some kind of defining characteristic that will be corrupted by the building of new houses, I would say slightly, maybe we would call it ahistorical. So that's your dick joke.
Mm.
Very good. Ed tried to call me back, but I decided I decided no, because it wasn't really appropriate during the conversation.
Did you also tell him, not tell him why you were calling?
No, I just called him and hung
He's
up.
He's
going to
be panicking.
Good. Right. We will be publishing an interview with Andy Burnham on Saturday on Apple and Spotify. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen. You can listen to that interview.
On this feed?
Well, not necessarily this feed, because people won't be watching this right now.
Okay, so if you're watching it,
yeah,
it'll be available on YouTube.
No, yeah, this is available on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah.
But the Andy Burnham interview will not be available on YouTube.
Oh, this won't be?
No, it's audio only.
Oh, really?
We're in an audio-only future. Is that us?
I think so.
Perfect. Ava Santina, it's been a pleasure. As always, great job.
Great job from you too.
Thank you. I just show up and look pretty. That's what I do.
Mm. Another fat shaming joke from Ollie about me.
It's documented. Everyone saw it.
Yeah. Mm. Right.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.